Good morning. Welcome to our meeting. It's 9 a.m. on December 16th, 2025, and time beginning a regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Sid Logan, President of the Commission. Yeah. Joining me today are Commissioner Leah Dalton Crosby, our Secretary, John Harlow, our CEO, Colin Willenbrock, our Chief Operating and Legal Officer, Allison Morrison, Clerk of the Board, Jenny Rich, Deputy Clerk of the Board, Morgan Stolzner, Deputy Clerk of the Board. Vice President Tony Olson is absent today. Please mute or turn off your cell phones and other electronic devices at this time. If you would like to join me in the flag salute, be it then.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Copies of the agenda are located on the Deputy Clerk's table where they'll be addressed. Are there any items to be added or changes to be made to the public agenda? None either. Comments from the public is item one on the agenda, and that's when the board will hear comments for items that are not listed on today's agenda. Comments will be listed limited to 5 minutes, and person should recognize the speak. And the sign up cards located on the Deputy Clerk's table where they'll be addressed. Joining by Zoom, click raise hand or dial star 9 if you're We'll call on attendees to speak at the appropriate time. When you're called upon and on a phone, you will dial star 6 to unmute. This meeting is being recorded. So addressing the board during the meeting, please step up to the podium, use the microphone, state, spell your name, and indicate where you're from. Please remain at the podium while you speak and address the commissioners, not the audio. Documents, other materials that are into the record, hand them to the deputy clerk who will distribute them to the board. We appreciate your cooperation with our procedures. Please note that all motions receive an automatic silent second from the board. This ensures that all issues can be brought to the floor for discussion. First on our agenda is comments from the public. Are there any comments from the public on items not on today's agenda? Please raise your hand, state your first and last name for the record. I've seen no hands up the line, seen none in the room. We'll move on to our consent agenda. 2A, approval of the minutes for the regular meeting of December 2nd, 2025. 2B, bid awards, professional service contracts and amendments. 2C, consideration of certification / ratification and approval of district checks and vouchers. And 2D, consideration to pre-qualify contractors as bidders for electrical line work with the district during 2026. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Are there any comments from the public regarding the consent agenda? Please raise your hand. Not seen. Are there any questions?
I have none.
Yeah. I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passed unanimously. Next, item three, our CEO General Manager briefing and study session. This item is for the board and our CEO to discuss issues among ourselves with PUD staff. Introduce John Harlow, who will facilitate our conversation this morning. Good morning, John.
Good morning, commissioners. Got some good stuff on the agenda today. We'll start with our media and community engagement update, Kelly Stickney. Good morning, Kelly.
Morning, John. Good morning, commissioners. I'm Kelly Stickney, lead communications specialist, and it's my pleasure this morning to be here to give you our media and community engagement reports. I just want to start off by saying that obviously in the last week since this report was submitted, a lot has happened, and I'm sure Aaron Sweeney will cover that in the next media report, but I just wanted to highlight that there's been some really great work around storm preparation and response in the last week in the media, and I also wanted to shout out our new public relations specialist, Erica Keene, who's really stepped up and did an amazing job in her I think she's been here about 2 months now, so it's good for her first winter weather to get under her belts. So a few weeks ago, we celebrated the bomb cyclone anniversary, which was a little bit of a surprise that this received so much media attention, but it was great to remind folks of all the tremendous effort our crews and our support staff did to respond to that very devastating weather event. We got coverage in a multitude of magazines, Seattle Times and television. We were able to talk about the FEMA lack of FEMA reimbursement for that event, as well as highlight some of the great changes that we've been able to make since that storm. We have a brief clipping for you to watch of some of the coverage we received.
The bomb cyclone caused widespread damage and so many outages, costing tens of millions of dollars. And a year later to the day, two major utilities in the area see their benefit there now. Should we get hit with a similar storm in the future?
County residents Jason Sloss talked with Puget Sound Energy and Snohomish PUD about the changes they have made to help keep people safe and informed. In the Pacific Northwest, gusts reached hurricane force.
There were challenges from the get-go. The bomb cyclone requiring a monumental response from utilities racing to repair equipment and restore power.
911 calls. We're flooding in. We're in the first couple days of the storm. And knocking wire to the ground, poles broken.
The damage was just so significant, and it created tremendous access issues. So it wasn't just fixing the problem, it was actually getting to where the damage was that we needed to fix.
Working around the clock replaced hundreds of power poles and transformers. The utilities say lessons were learned along the way.
It was really significant.
According to Snohomish PUD spokesperson Kelly Stickney, the work was more of a challenge because of communication issues.
Our crew members who were out in the field didn't have good internet access to be able to use the tools they were provided. So now all of our trucks have Wi-Fi boosters so that if a situation like this occurs again, we can stay in communication.
At the peak, 450,000 PSE customers were without power, and the same for 166,000 Snohomish PUD customers. And for many, outages lasted more than a week. After the storm, both utilities say they realized their outage maps needed improvement.
Our outage mapping information on it was very difficult for customers to understand. And so for the last year, we've been working really hard on our systems, our technology, both in the field as well as the control center.
So we've made some significant improvements to the outage map. Customers can see the circuit they're on, they can get more information about their outage, and now they can sign up so they can get a text message anytime they're out.
The utilities say the effort is ongoing to make the systems and equipment more efficient and reliable.
Each storm is different. Each storm presents us an opportunity to get better.
I believe our crews and our support people did a great job responding to that storm, but I think we are better today than we were a year ago.
Jason Sloss, Cairo 7 News.
Wonder if it wasn't called bomb cyclone, if it wouldn't be newsworthy to come back.
Excellent question. We also received coverage in APPA for our cyber tabletop exercise. And then we were highlighted in Public Power Daily for our partner forum that our folks in customer service and our income qualified programs put together to bring our community members to partners together to really see how we can better serve our customers. Our tree power program was highlighted in Public Power Monthly. That was an article that worked on with Sherry Miller, which does a great job of highlighting how this program is utilizing trees to reduce electrical demands. We received an award for a bronze for customer satisfaction. And this is a photo of some of our incredible CoreCom folks accepting that award at the conference just a few months ago in Utah. And then engagement. So we are wrapping up 2025. And I wanted to share some numbers with you of engagement across the district. So in 2025, we hosted 13 of our own events. This includes things like Energy Block Party, our Key Accounts Coffee Chats, Hydropower Appreciation Days, just a lot of great events we hosted. We attended 38 chamber meetings. This is a big increase from last year. We've really changed the way we approach these meetings. We now have folks who are assigned to attend, and we are very optimistic that this will help us have better communications with our small and medium business owners. So really proud of that effort. We attended 8 Economic Alliance of Snohomish County events that were significant. We provided 6 community presentations. This is largely focused on our infrastructure improvement projects, ranging from Everett to Delta to Maltby to Paradise, as well as Crosswind Transmission Line. We attended 21 community tabling events. So these are events that are hosted by our community members. This could be things like the Fair on 44th in Linwood, Return of the Salmon Festival in Salton. A lot of great opportunities to get out where our community is and meet them where they're at. We had 44 education program events. A lot of these are field trips out at Woods Creek. I can't even speak to how popular this is. We just put out to our public the opportunity to apply to attend one of these field trips in 2026. And we received a record amount of applicants. I believe around 65 applicants for this program. We're only able to provide 10 field trips. So it's just a really speaks to the wonderful work our education team is doing to educate students about the importance of hydropower to their PUD and in our community. Our HR team attended 24 job recruitment events. We were in 3 different parades. We had 4 high voltage trainings at least. The numbers you're seeing, this is the first time we've tracked numbers like this, this level of detail this year. It's really exciting for us to see the full breadth of our engagement work. Some of these numbers might actually be larger. I think that one is one of those, but it's great for us to get that safety message out to the first responders that we work with during storm events. Our amazing income qualified team led by Missy Wilch and Jeff Feinberg attended 24 targeted income qualified tables to provide resources to seniors and income qualified customers in our territory. We were at 3 touch a truck events and we had 6 tours of district property. So this ranges from the Arlington microgrid to tours of our Woods Creek facility. So overall, we estimate we touched over 25,000 of our customers this year in a one-on-one face-to-face setting. So then looking at next year, we're really trying to take a strategic approach to our engagement. So these are the things that we are using to drive where we'll be. The Marysville-Getchell transmission line, with that construction starting in 2027, we know that we need to get out in that community and start talking about that line in 2026. Crosswind will continue to be on our radar, as will the Everett to Delta transmission line. And specifically on that project, it's engaging the community around the art that we are working to do the wraps on the poles. So that will start next year. When we get our HEARS funds, that will be one of the driver for engagement next year. And then public safety power shutoff continues to be a topic that we need to get out into the community and talk about. So that is one of our drivers. And then lastly, engagement council data review. So as you saw, we're starting to track the numbers. We're also tracking geographically where we're at and demographically who we're speaking to. So we're working with our DIG team right now to create a map, which I hope to show you next year, where we can see where we have been and where we're not reaching with our engagement efforts, so we can make sure to have those areas be priorities for us as well. Some of the events that we'll be returning to next year include the Herald Senior Resource Festival, our annual Arbor Day event. Of course, the Block Party will be back on April 25th, and we're very excited. There's going to be some exciting new things at the Block Party this year that we're really looking forward to. Bike Everywhere Day will be at Everett Pride again this year, Aquafest, as well as the Stand Camino Parade. And then to talk about PSPS, we'll be back at Granite Falls Show and Shine. We'll be at National Night Out in Marysville and Everett, as well as we're currently choosing one other National Night Out that we have capacity to attend. The Fair on 44th is always a great event for us. So we'll be at that again this year, as well as Return of the Salmon. We are hoping to be at Tulalip Lights and Ice next year, and we'll be working on that. And then, of course, we'll be back at Holiday on the Bay. Some of our events will look a little different next year. For Hydropower Appreciation Day, that will be two half days on a Friday and Saturday rather than one full Saturday. We are hoping that that will help our staff be able to carry that workload. And we want to see if this helps more members of our public be able to attend that event. We are changing the way we are doing the Evergreen State Fair. We will have shortened employee hours, but the exciting thing about this is for the first time, our outreach folks will be co-located with our high voltage trailer so that there's a real benefit to that for people to see those and to have that draw. So we're looking forward to that as well. And then this year will be our first annual community energy run at the Water Shop on October 3rd to raise funds for our community energy fund. We have big goals for that and hope to do a lot to benefit our income qualified neighbors in need. A few new events we're looking at for next year. We are planning a ribbon cutting for the El Sol El Alcance de Sus Manos project in Everett. We will let the commission know as soon as we have picked a date for that, but looking at potentially early summer or early fall. We will be at the Marysville Strawberry Festival Parade to do outreach for our upcoming transmission project and potentially at the Arlington 4th of July Parade as well. We will also try to be at the Marysville 4th of July Parade again for that transmission project. We'd like to attend SkyFest this year in Arlington to talk about all the great things happening at our North County office, including the battery project, as well as the Crosswind transmission line. And then we are planning on doing some pop-ups at the Snow Isle Library in Marysville, where we can talk about the transmission project, but also just share community resources and income qualified opportunities and just general updates on what is available at the PUD. So that is our current plan for 2026. We never know what's going to come up, so I imagine there will be maybe a few more things added throughout the year, but I'm happy to take any questions or comments the commission has.
Yes. Well, thank you for the presentation. That's amazing. A lot of events that we are present, and I like that. So I have a question. 25,000 people that are engaged. Do we have the desegregated data about demographics or languages or race, ethnicity, all that?
This is where we're headed. So this year we started actually tracking, it's new for us to track the number of people we've engaged with. So that's our new number. And then we'll have the data by geography here soon. We'll have visual data for that. We're also tracking our ILA use, so that's that translation device that you all have seen. So we'll be able to get some idea of what language resources we're using, but we still have work to do in this area, and we wanna make sure we're reaching all segments of our population. We wanna be tracking in a way that's respectful and not putting staff in an uncomfortable position of trying to determine who exactly we're tracking, but we want to make sure we're getting everyone. So there's a little bit of a balance and a dance there that we're still figuring out. And we're hoping that by increasing advertisement of our translation services that we have available, we can have some better data about who we're connecting with.
And regarding safety, that's amazing, the video, the Cairo, that's nice. So how we can keep informed other communities besides English in order to prepare right now as we are facing that with the storm and flooding? So how we communicate with other communities that don't speak English?
Yes, this is a great question. So we've done a little bit this year. We did the article with the Latino Herald that really focused on safety. But I think one of our next steps in our evolution of engagement is determining how do we connect with community leaders in these communities so that we can build those relationships and use that as a driver for how we reach those communities. I think we've done a
really good job of that around the El Sol project and making relationships with the Connected Casino neighborhood, but there's definitely more work to do there. And this will be high on our priorities for 2026, probably more so in 2027. There are some areas where having materials in multiple languages will help us, but I believe that developing deeper relationships with those community leaders is really key to our success in that regard.
Well, I'm going to give maybe a suggestion. So I saw the Latino Herald, I don't know if they reach out to you or not, but they posted an article regarding the Espada Lake. So I have no idea. And they keep posting different things regarding the storm and the map and everything. So I hope they are communicate with you, because as Latinos, that's the only channel, the communication since a year ago that shut down the Univision. So there's no other channel. So if, and this storms is a chaos and it's safety, many people, they lost their homes, and how we can communicate.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Okay, this is the map or all this stuff. I'm not, how we can collaborate and unify better efforts in order to safety things.
Yes, thank you. That's an excellent reminder about the importance of being able to do proactive media work. That's one of the reasons I mentioned Erica at the beginning of this. She has provided us additional capacity to do this work better, and we will make sure that we reach out to the Latino Herald specifically today, even to get that proactive.
They are doing an amazing job. I don't know about they keeping for the community. And there exist other media too. I mean, they, for example, maybe Korean, you know, the Korean, they communicate through the newspapers. I see in the libraries, the stock, and different languages too. So maybe you can reach out to them in order to send whatever press release that you send to other media, to send to identify what other medias besides English, they are outside already. To include it in the press releases that you sent regarding the storm emergencies. But thank you. Nice presentation. Amazing numbers. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a quick question. Well, it's a lot of events. Thank you. First off, let you know SkyFest is no more. It's not really widely known, but it is on their website. You're done.
Well, we will not be attending
that. I was wondering about... we haven't done a State of the Utility in a while, and I was wondering, you know, we did it virtually one year, coffee chat, economic lights. We still seem to have some of those. And then I was thinking that you're talking about chambers. I wonder if there's a State of the Chamber light that the staff that goes to chambers present. Chambers are often really wanting to know, wanting presenters, and we'd be a great one. So it's just something to think about.
No, absolutely. Excellent suggestions. We were able to do, I believe, 5 chamber presentations this fall around storm preparedness. And I love the idea of doing one in the spring, January time. It's more of a state of the PUD. We'll also reach out to Brenda White in Government Relations to see if we can organize something around the Economic Alliance State of the Utility conversation again.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I echo Commissioner Logan regarding the presentations and the Chamber of Commerce. I attend Linwood and Magotillo, and I think this is a wonderful opportunity. I don't know if you did in the past, but it's going to be nice.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Kelly. Excellent job, and just a monster kudos to you, the entire CorpCom team, education team. You guys just continue to blow it out of the park. Thank you.
John.
All right, next up, we're going to have Scott Spahr provide the commission a Spada Lake spill update. Morning, Scott.
Good morning. Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
So I'm Scott Spahr. I manage generation operations in the engineering. And it's been an exciting 4 months in terms of generation. We went from historic record low inflows into Spada Lake this summer. In August and September, we were at historic lows in terms of inflows. We were coordinated with the city of Everett on potential drought response. And then, you know, this last week we had historic highs. We reached an all-time high level of inflow into the lake with the Spirit River that came in. So sometimes water management might be boring, but it's been with exciting twists and turns. Layer into that you got an update that we had a unit outage for most of November. So we were without unit two on our repair program for just about 1 month. And that was working through weekends, long shifts, and happy to say that went back online right at the start of December. And so we had both large units available. We were able to pull down the lake into state three, which is where we want to keep it. But then in this storm event, we got over 17 inches of rain in 6 days. And that went from state three to the spill. We opened valves in coordination with the city of Sultan in advance. The dance that we do in generation is we have low-level outlet valves. When we see a big storm coming in, we will, at our discretion, open those up at a time before downstream flooding is taking place to try to add some capacity to the lake. And then the dance is to shut those valves when the Skykomish is getting to its highest level. So we can capture all the storm at that point. But then inevitably, if there's too much water coming into the system, we ended up spilling. So the spill that occurred was the fifth largest that we've seen. We were in touch with our CorpCom group, with our emergency management group, and with the city of Sultan all through the event. Providing them updates and really getting consultation from the city of Sultan on how they wanted us to operate those level outlet valves. So I think it all went well as it could be planned. Just to give you an update, we made choices to draw down the reservoir over this weekend, again, by opening up those valves and creating a pocket of space. And if everything is perfect with the projections we're getting from the National Weather Service and the Northwest River Forecast Center, we're supposed to get up just below spill at the end of this week. Again, that's if everything goes perfectly. So, you know, I haven't had a normal weekend in about a month and a half. I'm looking forward to that, but I really do think that, you know, I'm one point person for a big team that's been working through some extraordinary things, and hopefully we're coming out the other side, and let's hope for some snow in the mountains as opposed to all this rain.
Oh, God. I want to say thank you for the update, and I'm really sorry that you don't rest for a while, and maybe you are not going to, because the weather looks like it's going to continue raining. So, but I want to say thank you to every single one, every individual that is outside to keep us safety, and all the response, the 24/7, I cannot even imagine. I'm really grateful for everyone, every individual they are working beauty. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
I had a question. So I was up online, I couldn't sleep. I was looking at the levels of the lake, and then I got new water. Well, how much freeboard is there? And so on our document, recent training, we had PowerPoint on our website, looked at that, and I saw that there's a number that it's modeled at. We have 20 feet of freeboard, and it's something like 10 feet or something is modeled, like the worst sort of worst possible. And then I was recalling, and I'm sorry, I cannot remember the gentleman's name, but we celebrated somebody with a point of the month a few months ago. We built a hydrological model
yeah.
we're using. Has that changed how we look at how much spill?
Yeah.
How much freeboard we truly have, or
yeah. Yeah, so Andrew McDonald is our head of our natural resources group, and he is he's smarter than I am when it comes to building analytical models. But what he's built for us is this, we call it the what if machine. And it we say, like, what if we generated at 80 megawatts, you know, over this time period, and had these valves open this much, like, how much would that draft the reservoir with other things coming in? It's a big step forward from where we were before that, where it was, you know, some fill stuff. So we still don't know the forecast perfectly. You know, we'll never know that. But that's definitely an improvement. And I guess since you asked, you know, we've got 20 feet of freeboard from when we start to spill to the top of the dam. The highest we've ever seen is 7.5 feet. That was in 1990. So there's a ton of capacity in there. The thing that I always emphasize in any venue is that people associate the PUD and Spada Lake spilling with flooding occurring in the city of Sultan because they see the correlation. The truth is it's about a 9-to-1 ratio. Unregulated Skykomish is 9 times the flow is what the Sultan is. And we do what we can, but do what we can with a smaller lake.
Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Scott. And again, a huge thank you to you, the entire generation team. It's been, with the outage and all the other work going on, major challenges, and you're navigating it very, very well. All right. Next up is our SnowSmart quarterly update and Kevin Wavering. And I believe John Heave is going to make it.
Thank you, John. Yeah, John Heave will be making a special appearance today, so we're excited to have him here. Good morning, commissioners.
You might be coming to Santa or
something. I'm really right here.
Still right here. That's really exciting special appearance.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Kevin Labering, program director for the SnowSmart program. As you know now, John Heave is here also, principal engineer, and is managing our distribution automation project. So we were, our last update was actually, we met with you in September. So, correct. Met with you in September 3rd for the workshop around SnowSmart. So presentation today is standard. Provide a quarterly update to the commission and to help you be informed of the program's current progress and our next steps. So today last time we met with you in the workshop, we talked about the big three benefits, or we're going to talk about one of those benefits today. We'll provide an update on our partnership with Department of Energy, talk about some challenge and mitigation opportunity that we had. Just recently, share with you the metrics that we talked about in the workshop, give you updated metrics and budget report. And then John will be sharing with us the distribution automation map and some neat things behind that. Measurable customer benefits. We heard you in our workshop, and so John will be sharing some exciting news on that, and then we'll talk about next steps. So the SnowSmart big three benefits. We talked about these in our workshop: reduced outage times, decreased wildfire risk, and improved grid efficiency. So just wanted to touch on decreased wildfire risk today. As you're aware of, with during the summertime, we'll have what's called these red flag warnings when there's low humidity, high temperatures, high wind, possibly conditions for wildfires to possibly occur. And so during these times, we want to make our operations more safer at that time. So reclosers that we have out in the field will be set to wildfire mode to make them even safer, operate more safely during those conditions. It's exciting. Some of the things that will be coming up in our program is the introduction of radios that will be installed out in the field, along with our equipment that's out there to be able to minimize even further the risk of wildfire. And with this, we have our program is installing a number of items of equipment, automation equipment that will be out in the field that we'll be able to remotely access. And so today, we have equipment that's out there that is manually set to a wildfire mode setting, which takes some better part of a day to be able to go out there and physically. Exciting thing that we have on the program is one of our Sensus radios was installed in conjunction with our wildfire equipment that we have out there. And we were able to, during a red flag warning event, we were able to remotely access and set this to wildfire mode last summer. And so this, what would have taken hours to do, just took a matter of minutes. So you think about when this multiplies, as we install more and more of this equipment out in the field, we will be able to proactively set these settings much more quickly, remotely. And so exciting to see that happen, kind of a proof of concept last summer, where it worked really well. Our Department of Energy partnership, so as you remember, we have a $30 million grant that we benefit from to help us implement this program and accelerating our timeline of the program from work that we were planning on over the next 20 years down to a five-year period of time. Our relationship with Department of Energy continues to be strong. We have a great relationship with them. We meet with them every 2 weeks, talk about the status of the project, very transparent on how things are progressing. And we're seeing good messaging from them also. One of the indicators is our reimbursement. So we just recently received over $800,000 in reimbursement for work that was completed in August, and we have other reimbursements that are in the queue right now. As we've met, John and I attend a user group for other recipients of this type of grant. Our utility seems to be in the strongest state. Other utilities are still benefiting. Some have been dropped, but they're still working on reimbursements from second quarter of this year, and we're already starting to look into third quarter of this year. Challenges and mitigation. So part of our program is installing equipment that will help minimize the number of outages and the impact, the duration and the impact of outages. So fewer customers being impacted by a particular outage and the duration of that outage being a shorter time. So equipment's being installed, automation equipment is being installed along with communication devices that will enable us to be able to implement this benefit in the future. This equipment is being installed right now. We have over 30 of our what are called the three-phase reclosers that are being installed out in the field. And just a couple months ago, we received, or let me back up, We've been installing that equipment and continue to plan to install that in the fourth quarter and beyond this year. A few months ago, we received notification from our supplier that a small component, what's called a paddle connector, was going to be delayed. They had to find something happened to their provider of materials around copper, and they needed to find a new supplier. And so we received notification that we would not be receiving any more of these connectors until March this coming year. So that meant like a 6 month delay in the ability to install this type of equipment. So John Heave and team looked at, you know, what's the impact? What can we do about this? Because we plan on installing this equipment during this 6 month timeframe. So John worked with the team and thought about, okay, what can we do to fill up the schedule with other work that we have? And so panel work that was planned to be completed over the next few years was accelerated. We were able to get that equipment earlier. And so work on that was able to fill in that void. Still, there was a need to be able to fill in. We had more time, more ability to be able to install equipment. We didn't want to get behind. And so team got together and thought, let's talk to the supplier one more time. Let's do two things. One was to talk to them about the importance of this grant and how this equipment is being funded by the grant. They did ask about reporting. They're like, well, do you have to report to them any supply chain delays? And we said, yes, we're very transparent with them. So I think this helped them think a little bit more. But also an approach we took was to treat our supplier in a positive way and showing trust that they could come up with and create a solution that would benefit us. This was kind of a hope, but it was also a strategy to work with them because we plan on being a great partner with them in the long term. So we left the end of our meeting. A week went by, didn't hear anything. And then pretty soon we got an email from them as stating that they were able to locate 400 of these paddle connectors, which we are thrilled to get.
Wow.
We had been vetting other utilities, other distributors, couldn't find any of these. And so this meant that we'd be able to install 22 items of this equipment during this time frame. So really excited about that, and that helped fill in that void more. We have other work that we're moving around so that we're able to keep pace right now. But really exciting to see that happen with the project and keeping that positive relationship with. All right, so these are some metrics we wanted to just share around the equipment installations. So first three items that we see there are the ones that are currently being worked on. Substation designs, well on schedule, three-phase reclosers. That's the equipment that's used to reduce that outage time, that one I was just talking about related to that connector. That one is behind. 34 have been completed out of 430, though our engineering work is ahead of schedule. The installation delay that completed, that red item right there, that is due to equipment delays last summer that we have. John's working on a good plan to be able to catch us up. The program goes through 2029. We're planning on doing some catch up during 2026 and into 2027. Eventually, we should see that red turn into green. And then our wildfire mitigation equipment, that single phase recloser that we were talking about, plans have actually accelerated on that. We're excited that we're moving forward with the purchase of this equipment in January. So you'll be seeing in your consent agenda, there's $1 million order for equipment from Siemens. To be able to order this, and we can accelerate this work. So right now you see the schedule for that wildfire equipment, that middle item there, September 2026 through 2029. We're looking to move that earlier so that we can start installing that this spring and get a bulk of that installed through 2027 to accelerate that element of the program. Any questions so far?
I have a question or clarification. When you mentioned about the equipment, it's delayed. So yes. That is going to cost us more money.
It will delay
back the budget.
Yeah, that's a great question. So the delay of equipment that we had, will that impact the budget? Right now, what that means is the money that was being spent on the equipment is being moved into 2026 and 2027. So that amount will remain the same. It will still be reimbursable by Department of Energy. But yeah, any delays, there's a little bit of extra cost associated with any time you have a delay in a project. But we expect it to be minimal with this because it will be the same crew doing the same work with that. So it's really just a delay of the spending of that money.
And how often do we receive the reimbursement. How often do we receive the reimbursement?
Yeah, the reimbursement. So that will delay the reimbursement timing for that equipment too. So once we purchase the equipment, sign into a job, put in the work order and such, then we're able to start the process of getting that reimbursed. So it will delay the reimbursement of that portion of it. And we are moving some other work, accelerating some other work, especially with the wildfire equipment. So we should be able to see reimbursement of that work accelerating too.
Thank you.
Welcome. All right, so we've talked a lot about the equipment, software that's controlling this equipment, that helping out with our automation capability. That is on schedule, our advanced distribution management system, this platform software that's being installed. Sheila Crawford leading that project, doing a great job working with the team. As you see in the second swim lane there, the building and fig phase is on schedule. And we're excited to involve our operators with this project. And so in January, we're planning a configuration work. So the software that they'll be using, the way they interface with it, they will have a say on how it's going to work for them. So by the time they get trained on it, they're already familiar with it. So that should help out with the adoption of that software. And this is just a high level overall schedule. I love schedules. So this means a lot to me, but this is the overall program schedule that we're managing right now, as you see, goes through second half of 2029. Program costs. So that upper right area there, the original budget. So originally we were approved for $74.2 million. Right now we're tracking at $74.5 million. Nothing's really changed with that. This was an additional expense that we talked about last summer related to needing to contract out some of our engineering work for our worm packages that are being assembled for our installations.
I don't remember, but did we have a budgeted overage or
contingency?
Contingency, yeah, sort of. Thank you. When we did the business case,
I know. No, we don't.
Okay,
we don't. We're okay. This is our solid estimate. This is what we're working towards. Yep.
And why we are over or under the budget that you predict, right? Forecasting. So
yes, yes, we are over by forecasting over by $300,000. As we do have a long runway on the project right now, we're hoping that at the installations, we'll see efficiencies with that too. And so hopefully that can bring down our original estimates back down to our original 70%. All right, so that middle cluster of numbers there, 2025 actual spend year to date, $8.49 million. This is not in October as we submitted this presentation. We didn't have our November numbers yet. Our budget for this year was 2025 was $12.4 million, and we're forecasting at $11.4 million. And so there was $1 million that was moved out to 2026. That had to do with that equipment that we were pushing out due to delays. And then that bottom cluster of numbers, current total spend on the overall project, $8.76 million. Department of Energy reimbursements today, 3.37. So we're really excited about that ratio getting closer to that 50% level of what we have spent on the project. And then we have Leslie Moss, our grant coordinator, doing a wonderful job working with the Department of Energy and keeping us almost real time with our reimbursements. I would say she has over $700,000 in the queue right now to be reviewed by Department of Energy, be reimbursed soon. All right, Well, we have some exciting distribution automation maps to look at and some wonderful news. So our special guest, John Heap.
It's like Elvis.
Good morning, Commissioners. John Heap, Principal Engineer, Distribution Automation Project Manager. I'm not dressed up as Santa, but I'm bringing gifts, I guess. So, picture's worth a thousand words, and I think it's very true when we're trying to talk about the enormity of this project. And that was one of the questions that the Commission asked at our last workshop. So, what I'm showing here on this image is a look at our wildfire risk in our service territory. So as you look to the east of this image, you can see reds and oranges and yellows, and that really kind of depicts where we have the highest wildfire risk in our territory. And then you can see all the colored lines showing where our main, you know, system feeders are. And then I'll draw your attention to kind of the eastern part where you can see those blue and purple dots and stars. A little bit on Camino Island, you see those dots and stars. That's where we have identified locations in our service territory where we're going to be installing some of our wildfire mitigation equipment. There's a lot of work that went into this, you know, diving into the imagery and all of our, you know, system maps to figure out where we're going to put all this equipment. So everywhere where you see a dot or a star outside of kind of the north and east parts of our system is where we're going to be installing this wildfire mitigation equipment. The stars are one type of device. The circles are a different type of device. But just wanted to share where we're going to be doing this work and kind of the scope. So this is about 350 installation locations and very tightly clustered in our highest wildfire risk in the communities headed up to the, you know, Cascade Foothills, the Gold Bar and Darrington and Index. I would take any questions on that, but good. Okay. The next lovely picture we're going to talk about is our distribution automation map. This is focused on more of the reliability portion of the project. So every blue dot, every blue pin you see on that map is a location where we have identified we're going to install one of our three-phase recloser projects. Now that starts with engineers going through our system and looking at where we think maybe the equipment should be placed, and then reviewing that with the outer office folks and get their impact on or input on where they see outages, where they have difficulty accessing different parts of the system to really kind of get their feedback on where those should be. So blue is planned. That represents about half of the number of devices we're going to be installing. So you can kind of see some gaps where we haven't looked at. So for example, we haven't looked at Lake Stevens area, but that will start seeing blue dots as we go through that design. The red dots, and you can see them kind of in the Gold Bar and Index area. Those are locations where we started the engineering design for starting putting that wildfire equipment. So if you think about the previous map, that's the dots or stars that are actually showing up in this map. And then the green are devices that are fully complete. They are integrated with our existing SCADA system, and our control system operators can see the information coming in from those, as well as send controls to that equipment. And I'm happy to report that some of them were used last night. So happy to see that.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Regarding that, how we can make sure that rural areas or rural wildfire and historical underserved communities are prioritized equitable part of the system. Yes.
I'm going to take a stab at that.
Okay.
The initial maps that we started when we were proposing this project with Department of Energy did include disadvantaged communities, and our goal was to demonstrate benefit to those communities. So one of the ways that we do that is by focusing on our wildfire areas. That's really going to hopefully improve the air quality conditions across the whole county and actually the region if we can prevent those wildfires. So that's one of the ways that we try to demonstrate benefits to the disadvantaged communities. As far as rural, the Snow Smart program is focused entirely on kind of the north and eastern parts of our territory, which are the most rural parts of our territory. And the reason those areas were selected is because they have more outages, worse reliability on those circuits. And so by providing this equipment in those areas, they'll have the biggest impact in improving that reliability. Does that answer your question? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, we were tasked with trying to answer some of the measurable customer benefits by the commission at our last discussion. And one of the things that we have looked at is how has the BPA product switch had an impact on the financial business case that we had initially proposed as part of our improved grid efficiency. So the initial analysis had, I'm not even going to talk about that. The updated analysis now is showing a benefit of about $1 million a year in savings as part of managing our demand throughout any given month. So this grid efficiency improvement will be providing, as a conservative number, it's less than two, but it's more than $1 million a year in savings as a part of implementing this program.
This is the voltage regulation and
yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. And then the other pieces want to talk about the improvement in reliability. And as an engineer, I have to have an acronym in here, and it's the System Average Interruption Duration Index, SAIDI. And that's really all about the number of minutes the average customer was without power. And our best estimate that we have is thinking that it's going to be about a 20% decrease in that metric that we measure. So every circuit is different. And I'm going to walk through four slides where we've gone through a deep analysis and show what the benefit is for different circuits and different types of circuits and our customers. So run through four of these. I'll talk mostly on the first one. So here's an example of a circuit that is feeding between Oso and Darrington. It's fed from Oso substation, circuit 1310. It's a very rural feeder. The length of it is 5.3 miles. You've got 153 customers fed off that circuit, and there will be one midline device. And it's, if you're looking at it, it's the red square with an R in it. That will be what the midline device is. So with that communication added to that device and with the new, you know, SCADA system controlling it, we expect a 9% improvement in that SAIDI metric. What that translates to is for customers on that feeder, their average time that they're expected to be without power goes from 6.5 hours down to 5 hours and 40 minutes. So fairly modest improvement. And I would credit that to the existing design, that where that recloser was placed was an optimal location. It's exactly where it should be to improve reliability. So it kind of speaks to, it was already pretty good and we're making a small improvement. Another example, this is from our Hartford substation. Again, fairly rural, kind of the area north of Lake Stevens, similar length, 5.4 miles, but this one has almost 1,700 customers fed off that device. Very similarly, we're going to have one midline device on this feeder, but we're expecting an improvement of 20% from the reliability metrics for those customers on that feeder. So translating to kind of real numbers for our customers, go from an hour and 7 minutes of outage to 54 minutes of outage is kind of an expectation. Right? So those two meters, very similar. One midline device, 9%, 20%. Third one, this is a little bit more suburban. This is a Marysville circuit fed out of one of our newest substations, Jennings Park. It's a shorter feeder, 3.3 miles. It's got 1,600 customers. And we're going to be deploying two midline devices on this feeder. And the expectation is for a 33% reduction in that SAIDI number, or the average customer expecting 40 minutes, now should expect 27 minutes. And then the final one is Eagle Creek. This is kind of a rural feeder north and east of Arlington. A very long feeder, 18 miles, so multiple times longer than the other feeders that we've looked at. It's going to have 10 midline devices, so a lot of infrastructure. But we do expect the improvement to be 43% for customers on that feeder, kind of moving the expected outage time from 6 hours to about 3.5 hours. So all of that was really meant to say we're expecting on average a 20% reduction in our SAIDI metrics, but it really depends on the configuration of the existing feeder, how many devices are going to be installed, to really understand the impact on individual customers. But overall, the expectation is 20%.
So let me understand. The estimated average reduction in SAIDI is 43%, which is the hours per year that an individual's electricity is out.
That's right.
But in a specific event, what it might mean for a customer, if I understand correctly, is their power might be out for a minute and restored, while others may be out for hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah, okay. I think customers, when they start experiencing that more, I think we already experienced it some, I think they really understand and appreciate that ones that we can switch back on are restored almost right away.
That's exactly right.
It's more exciting than ever.
The big benefit is that for that first hour after a tree falls through the line or something, we'll be able to get customers back in really quick.
Yeah.
But those customers that are in that section where the tree fell,
yeah,
they're going to be out until the repairs are done. But it's all about that first few minutes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a question. Yeah. Are there areas of the district with high wildfire risk that are still waiting for deployment?
Absolutely, yes. The project schedule was initially to start deploying the wildfire equipment at the kind of end of 2026. And we are trying to accelerate that wildfire equipment deployment, hopefully to get some installed for this upcoming wildfire season. That'll depend on the lead times for equipment and contracting times, but that's the push. Certainly, some of this reliability equipment will serve two functions. It will also help with addressing some of our wildfire concerns. And so we'll have more of these three-phase reclosers that will be able to provide some of that benefit for wildfire mitigation this upcoming year.
Thank you.
So in this picture, is this the circuit then for the entire substation?
This is one of eight Eagle Creek circuits. Okay. Okay, so next steps, we've got another quarterly update that'll be coming in March. We've got a couple of things that'll be coming before the commission, hopefully in January, specifically around procuring the equipment for the wildfire mitigation, as well as for approval to buy some of those critical connectors that Kevin brought up earlier in the presentation. There's going to be a lot of work and effort in the ADMS and SCADA systems as the infrastructure, the computers and servers are now mostly set up, and now our users can actually get in and see the tools, and a lot of configuration work that needs to go as part of that. So that's what we've got for next steps, and happy to take any questions that may have.
Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you all.
Great job, John and Kevin.
John, let's take a short break.
Sounds good.
It's 10:04. Let's come back at 10:15. All right, it's 10:15. Here we're back. We have next first, John.
A update on our energy assistance and income qualified weatherization project, and Jeff Feinberg with a special appearance by Missy Welch.
Appearance.
Good morning, Jeff Feinberg, Senior Manager of Energy Services. Yeah, and unlike John and Santa, Missy's made it clear she doesn't want to make an appearance. We'll see. Maybe we can get her up here before it's all said and done. We'll see. Good morning. I'm here today first to say I'm presenting a wonderful problem, and that's what we're going to be talking about briefly here for a few minutes. And originally, we had intended to just make this contract amendment just a part of the consent agenda for your approval. But really, we didn't want to miss the opportunity to be able to present and give more of a kind of program level overview. So we are kind of breaking with what we know is common practice, which is presenting and then giving the board time before we come back and we ask for an amendment approval. However, today, we are asking for your approval at the conclusion of this presentation and when we get to the vote. Obviously not as part of this presentation, but when we get to that part of the meeting. And again, so apologies for that, but it was one of those where the timing of the contract and the amount of the contract, it made more sense to make sure that you guys are fully aware of what we're doing with this additional funding. Even though we did present on this program back earlier this year. I'm trying to remember, was that March?
Okay. We did March and actually in June as well.
Okay. That was Missy Welch, Program Manager in Energy Services. Okay.
I'm here.
All right. There we go. And so just a little bit of background and a reminder. We partner with Snohomish County Weatherization. They are the administrators of the federal weatherization program. We did in 2019 make a change. Previously, as a partner with the weatherization program, we had always paid into the state's matchmaker program. And then they would disperse those funds accordingly to the various partners throughout the state. In 2019, we actually contracted directly with Snohomish County Weatherization. And the main reason we made that change was so that we could work directly with the county and just have basically less layers in between us and the folks doing the work so that we can kind of talk about measures when we wanted to add new measures or whenever they had questions about what was going on or what could be installed in a home, we could work directly with them without having to go through the state and then to the county that way. So we started that in 2019. It's been a very successful program. And then this is just some of our updates. Or did I skip one? Okay. These are our updates. And again, what's really fun to see on this, I would say for the 6 years that I've been around the program, one of the questions we've consistently asked weatherization at the county is, if we give you more money, can you serve more homes? And really, most of the time, they said, unfortunately, no. And they were limited to how many contractors they had in their network. They were limited to some of the different things that they needed to do as being a part of the federal program. I'm happy to report, though, that over the last couple of years, they've been able to increase the amount of contractors that they work with. They've been able to get to a lot more homes. And so as we've asked, hey, if we give you more money, can you serve more homes? The answer has actually been yes. We can. And so you can see that here reflected in our 2024 year-end numbers, and then also where we're already at in 2025, only through the month of November. And so you can see we've already surpassed what we did last year, and we continue to want to grow this program. I mean, one of the things Missy is being tasked with in 2026 as we think about our energy assistance program portfolio is we really want to see more of these kind of threaded energy efficiency programs with billing assistance and more energy efficiency measures to make them more available for our energy burdened customers. And so we're hoping to launch several new pilots into 2026. And so, and the other note there that's important is, yes, any customer that participates in income qualified weatherization, they automatically get auto-enrolled into our discount program as well.
So, but these homes are all electrically heated, is that?
Right.
I'm looking at Misty.
And that's, they are. And that's a great question because we also have something exciting that we'll share on the final slide. And so this is just, again, a reminder of kind of where we were at. So pre-19, we had the state matchmaker program. You can see that in 2019, we had this direct relationship that we developed with the county. In 2019, that was also when CETA was passed. And you'll recall that one of the important components as far as it relates to energy assistance goes, we are tasked with every 2 years doing an assessment to see who are the folks in our community that are 80% area median income and below and have an energy burden beyond 6%. And those are the customers that we have to serve. As of our last assessment, which was now roughly 2 years ago, there were 22,000 households that met this criteria. We'll be doing another assessment at the very beginning of 2026 so that we kind of know where we stand. The good news is the law requires us to serve 60% of them by 2030. We are already serving at that 60% and a little bit beyond that number, actually, as of our last assessment. And we expect our numbers to be even higher when we do our assessment coming up.
Wow, that's impressive.
And I think I wanted to make this comment. I know in our last meeting, I think a question was asked to John about how many households are on our income qualified discount program. And we have roughly a little over 19,000. What we didn't say, and that I think is really important, is historically, year over year, we had about 12,000 to 13,000 households on that program. But over the last 2 years, Missy and the customer service folks that support our work have done a really good job of opening all these different streamlined and auto enrollment channels and getting out in the community to make sure customers are aware. So that 19,000 number is a really big change from where we historically have been, but obviously we're not done yet. And I know that's not even what I'm here to talk about, but I just wanted to add that comment because I think it's important context. All right, so what are we doing? We're seeking approval for an amendment resolution today that will increase the funding cap to 4.6 million. And that is what we believe are the program funds needed that will take us all the way through 2027. There's a couple of things that are kind of driving that. One is, of course, increased costs all the way around. But another one, again, is we're serving more households. So that's a great problem. But then finally, we're working with the county, who is also working with PSC, where we're doing some kind of unique things where customers that are not customers that are dual fuel customers. PSC is working with the county to pay for the weatherization measures to change the heating system to electric heating. And then once those customers become electrically heated, we then are looking at the other weatherization measures needed in those homes and serving them with those measures. And that's a big change that's going to happen in 2026 that we're really excited about, to serve a whole group of customers that typically and in the past we've not been able to serve before. But now, because of some changes and some focuses of PSC, we're able to kind of get to those households as well. So we're pretty excited about that.
Well, that's exciting news, and I have a few questions. Yes. So are we seeing disparities in program access by geographic or language or housing type or ownership status?
Missy, do you want to come and respond to that? So what I would say is, yeah, why don't you come? Yeah.
Oh, great. When it comes to targeting different demographics, that's part of the reason why the income qualified program is so important, because it gives us some of the demographics that we need to look at. So increasing from the 13,000 that he was talking about before and getting it to the 19, it opens us up because we can refer those customers. Because it's a federal program, though, essentially they have to take it as a first come, first serve, and if people qualify. So I don't think that we're able to target specific demographics for that. It's more like the household type and whatever we can do to get into the spaces that need it. I think multifamily is one of the ones, Jeff, you can probably, that is kind of a, I want to say a black hole, but that's one of the biggest challenges that I'm hoping we can come up with some solutions for going forward. And that'll serve a lot of the customers that you're talking about.
19 also the barriers is with being departments or mobile homes. The people that live in those areas, they are aware about these opportunities, but they cannot apply individually because the owner for those apartments, they need to apply, right?
Yes.
So how we are doing in collaboration with those?
So the county actually has part of their agreement. So what happens when a renter applies for the program, a packet goes to the landlord, says, do you agree to do this? We're going to do these upgrades on your home. You don't have to pay for anything. But in return, you're going to agree not to raise the rent for 2 years. And you agree not to sell the house for 2 years. So it, they have a 2-year cap on, you know, what they're able to do as part of the contract. So I'm a landlord and I had people that were income qualified in one of my homes and I got one of those packets and it was seamless. The tenants ended up moving out and you know, long story short.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, so there is a working process through weatherization that works with the landlord and the tenant to make those changes occur.
Are we having conversations with Haskell, for example, because Haskell own different properties, they are for other servers and marginalized communities, and perhaps they can apply through Haskell because individually cannot do that.
Haskell, Everett Housing Authority and Housing Help, especially for the voucher programs, we are working with them to try to enhance what we can. We're actually starting with the income qualified. I'm going to throw a plug in here. Everett Housing Authority, we did sort of a deep dive and we found out that 46% of the Everett Housing Authority tenants and the buildings that they own were not on the program. So we launched a thing to make sure that we're able to get all those people up to 100% and a process moving forward so no more customers fall through the cracks. There's a lot of work ahead for that.
It is a lot, but you are doing an amazing job and I'm glad that you are doing what you're doing. But in order to spread collaborations and build relationships, so maybe we can think in sometimes outside the box how you're doing, and I really like it. And for example, Section 8 too, I don't know through what channel we can address in and bring those opportunities to them. I'm thinking outside the box, maybe like I mentioned, relationships are crucial. So perhaps send an email also to the Mexican consulate, Guatemala consulate, Honduras consulate, all these consuls, they are and they exist. Why? Because maybe they always send different information to all the people, Mexicans, Guatemalans, Honduras, so, you know. So, and it's a good channel to say, hey, this is opportunity for the Mexican population or Colombian population or something like that. And I think diplomacy too, right? I mean, it's nice to have those opportunities in place. So, yes. Well, thank you for what you're doing. I really appreciate it.
Jeff, you're back.
Any other questions? I think the one comment that I would make too is that is what's super important about, you know, Kelly in her presentation, she shared about the community partner luncheon. And that was a really big step for us because each of these kinds of relationships take a lot of sort of work between, you know, our legal needs and their legal needs and our data privacy needs and their data privacy needs. And so there's a lot of like time in building these relationships to build these processes in. But Missy's been doing a really good job of kind of continuing to try to find who else wants to talk to us, who doesn't want to talk to us, and how do we get to them? And how do we also kind of build those pathways? Because to your point, you know, we've got to get to everyone and we've got to find creative ways to do it.
But I agree. I met her a year ago. I wasn't as a commissioner and I'm really impressed with her job. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah.
She's really great. Yes.
Elusive too.
Yeah, exactly.
And then once I met you too as well in the school doing the open house, and that was amazing. So
questions?
Thank you for all you're doing. Any other questions?
Yeah, because I think this for you, not for her. Okay. So as how does this program align with our CETA obligations?
Yeah, so this is one of our, you know, counting programs as it relates to energy burden reduction. And actually, this is probably one of the programs that has the deepest impact of the work that we do. Naturally, when we do income qualified weatherization, it's probably the most expensive cost per kilowatt hour when we're talking about our other energy efficiency programs. But obviously, it's strategically important to serve these customers as well. So we count our income qualified discount, we have our income qualified weatherization, and then we also have our community energy fund. And those are kind of the primary kind of bedrock programs. But like I said, as we get into 2026, one of the really changes in our focus for the last several years, what Missy's been really, really focused on is how do we get more people into the discount? Because once they're on the discount, now we can look at their consumptive history and we can make sure we've got the right programs. But in 2026, we're really going to be trying to do a lot more of this threaded energy efficiency and billing assistance versus, you know, billing assistance alone being our primary focus. That makes sense.
Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Missy. This is great work and just one of the many ways that making a huge impact on, in this case, the most vulnerable populations. So that concludes the presentations.
Next, item four, our CEO General Manager for your report.
Just a couple items to share. First, and this is important information for the commission, in alignment with Washington State's Clean Fuels Program requirements and accounting standards for restricted assets, Treasury staff has established the Clean Fuels Program Fund within the project reserve to track revenues generated from the sale of Clean Fuels Program credits and associated expenditures for those funds. This ensures compliance with the program restrictions, maintains transparency, and supports accurate financial reporting. And we are obligated to inform the commission per the resolution 6191. So that is to abide with that resolution. Also, last week, this was our CorpCom teams, thanks to Carrie Trimble, Scott Gibson, Alex Torrey, Jessica Spar, John Heeb, and Sarah Bond, we offered Team PUD a replacement class to our Fundamentals of Electricity, taught by retired employee Carlos Testada, who had taught that class for several decades. This new course, SnowPud Fundamentals, Past, Present, and Future, helps employees explore our service area, the customers that we serve, our people, and our history. They also learn where our electricity comes from and the fundamentals of electricity generation, transmission, and distribution, and information about the PUD's financial structure, values, and metrics. This pilot class included almost 50 employees and will be offered several times in 2026. And we would like to extend an invitation to the commission to attend that class when it would be available or when it would be possible for you. And that's all I have. Happy to answer any questions.
Does the class go final exam?
Yes, you will be tested. Commissioner tests.
Well, I'm in, and thank you for the invitation. I really am eager to learn, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. I heard rave reviews from those that had attended the class, and even a lot of excitement from those that were able to take the different segments and teach. So, yeah.
That's a phenomenal idea. Employees are in the best position to help the public understand more about the utility. And I think also we're so big, it'd be easy to work in a part of the utility and not really get the big picture. Great.
Awesome.
Next, item five, public hearing in action. 5A, disposal of surplus property, calendar year 2026 and first quarter. I'll call for a motion.
Based on a staff recommendation that the items are no longer necessary or useful to the district, I move that those items listed on exhibits A and B of the surplus property recommendation report be declared surplus and be sold for high bid of disposal of according to policy in the first quarter of 2026.
Okay, I'll now convene a public hearing. We have Claudia Lazar available to answer any questions. First, ask if there's any comments from the public regarding the resolution. Please raise your hand. That's many hands up. Do you have any questions from the public? I have none either. I'll close the public hearing and call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Next, 5B, consideration of resolution ordering, approving, ratifying, and confirming the construction and installation of the planner system of additions to the district's water utility as adopted on November 18, 2025, and applicable to a local utility district hereafter described forming local utility district number 68 of Snohomish County, Washington, and confirming the final assessment role. I will call for a motion.
I move approval.
Now, we need a public hearing. Christina Arndt is available to answer any questions, provide the prior presentation if necessary. First, ask if there's any comments from the public regarding the resolution. Please raise your hand. Hands raised. Do you have any questions, Commissioner?
No, I have none.
I have none either. We do this every year. I'm glad we can provide this. I'll close the public hearing and I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Next is 5C, consideration of a resolution adopting the 2025 Integrated Resource Plan. Call for a motion.
I move approval.
I will now reconvene a public hearing on adopting the 2025 Integrated Resource Plan. Gareth Samar is able to answer any questions and provide a prior presentation if necessary. First, ask if there's any comments from the public regarding the resolution. Please raise your hand. Okay, seeing no hands up. Questions?
I have no questions.
I have none either. I'll close the public hearing. I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passed unanimously. Next, 5D, consideration of resolution adopting the 2025 Clean Energy Implementation Plan. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
I will now reconvene a public hearing on adopting the 2025 Clean Energy Implementation Plan. Gareth Samar is still available. Can answer any questions provided prior presentation if necessary. Are there any comments from the public regarding this resolution? If so, please raise your hand. No hands raised. Any questions, Commissioner?
No.
We've been thoroughly briefed on all of these items, multiple presentations. I will close the public hearing and I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Next is 5E, consideration of a resolution adopting two-year consecutive targets for 2026-2027 and a 10-year conservation potential estimate for the district to comply with requirements of the Energy Independence Act. I'll call for a motion.
It's actually conservation. 10-year conservation potential.
Okay, what did that say?
Consecutive.
Okay, consecutive years for conservation. Okay. I'll start with consideration of a resolution adopting two-year conservation targets for 2026-2027 and a 10-year conservation potential estimate for the district to comply with requirements of the Energy Independence Act. I'll call for a motion. All right. I will now reconvene a public hearing on adopting the two-year conservation targets for 2026-2027 and a two-year conservation potential estimate.
It's a 10-year.
What? The first one was 2 year, wasn't it? Oh, gosh. I get two whacks at this, but I'm
doing great.
30%. I will now reconvene a public hearing on adopting 2 year conservation targets for 2026-2027 and a 10-year conservation potential estimate for the district to comply with the requirements of the Energy Independence Act. Gareth Samar is able to answer the questions and or provide prior presentation if necessary. First, ask if there's any comments from the public regarding the resolution. Please raise your hand. Seeing no hands raised, are there any questions? Other questions?
No, I have no questions.
Okay. Close the public hearing, and I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passed unanimously, but that's behind us. Next, item six, items for individual consideration. 6A, consideration of a resolution authorizing the manager, real estate services, to execute all necessary documents to purchase certain real property, tax parcel number 270514001014001400, located near the intersection of State Route 9 and 184th Street Southeast, Nahomish, Washington, as a future location of 115 kV ring bus and other district facilities. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Green Barnes is available to answer any questions regarding the resolution. Are there any comments from the public regarding the resolution? Please raise your hand. No hands raised. Do you have any questions, Commissioner? I'm just so pleased that we found a better location. So I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay. Aye.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Next is 6B, consideration of a resolution approving amendment number 3 to the collective bargaining agreement between Utility District Number 1 of Snohomish County and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local Number 77, for the period of April 1st, 2024 through March 31st, 2028. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Christy Schmitz, available to answer any questions regarding the resolution. Are there any comments from the public regarding this resolution? Please raise your hand. No hands raised. Any questions, Commissioner?
I have no questions.
I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passed unanimously. Next is 6C, consideration of a resolution authorizing the Chief Customer Officer, Customer Energy Services, of Public Utility District Number 1 of Snohomish County, to execute Amendment Number 5 to the Agreement 2019-20 Low Income Weatherization and Energy Savings Agreement with Snohomish County. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Jeff Feinberg, so to answer any questions, are there any comments from the public regarding this resolution? Please raise your hand. No hands raised. Do you have any questions? Looks like it's very fresh on my mind. I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay. Aye. Motion passed unanimously. Next, commission business. 7A commission reports.
I don't have any report. I don't think so.
Okay. And I don't have any reports either. I really appreciate that so much has been happening. Windstorm sort of caught me off guard. I didn't realize. And I was interesting to look at the map because we had several thousand people out, and in Camino, we had nobody out.
Actually, I'm sorry. I would like to say something in Spanish for all those people that really want to reach out to the beauty, because I received different calls, text message, and things like that. So, para ver los cortes de energía actuales en nuestra área de servicio, incluyendo detalles como la causa, la hora de inicio, los clientes afectados y el tiempo estimado de restauración, usted puede reportar un corte de energía al teléfono 425-783-1001 y usted podrá observar este mapa que se actualiza automáticamente. So, reporte algún cable eléctrico caído al 425-783-1001. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next is 7B, our Commissioner Event Calendar. Are there any changes to the event calendar? I had a question about the event. Shows that in August, PPC and Peanut are in Boise. What's the, does anyone know the occasion of?
No, that's just came out on their regular schedule for the year.
In Boise?
Correct.
Is that a board meeting?
It's the regular Peanut PPC meeting.
But not in Portland?
Correct. If you want more information, I'm happy to reach out to them.
I just was curious if we knew why it was in Portland.
Miss Colin knows something more than I do.
Yeah, I know we talked about it, but I can't remember. It coincides with another event that's scheduled now. It might be a market summit or something, but I can get more information.
I'm sure it'll be revealed as we approach August. Okay. Thank you. No other questions on the event calendar? Mm-hmm.
I don't think so, but I'm just curious, are we going to have a retreat?
You know, we should talk about that. I think let's talk about it at the next meeting when
so, yes.
The commission
also
says.
So, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, the next is 7C, our 2025 district dashboard. Questions, Commissioner? Find it. I have one here. You know, our OSHA recordables is really up there, and I don't know how do we take data like this and make it actionable to, because I know accidents can be all a whole variety. In 1 year we could have one kind, now we could have something else.
Yeah, we have
thoughts about that statistic of,
yeah, we gather all kinds of data around the injuries to the particular incident itself, the body part affected, the root cause, even time of day, day of the week, all those kind of different things. And then we look at that data and we will develop programs specific to, if it's an ergonomic issue, you know, you're training on correct body positioning or getting help or using equipment. We have had we don't have the ability on this particular report, but to drill down on some of those specifics. But a rash, I would call, of a particular types of injuries. The good news is that the severity rate is still trending in the right direction.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean we want to take our eye off of the just OSHA recordables as well. So we will double down as we go forward with some additional types of programs and or initiatives to address those.
And when we look at an accident, we figure out the root cause. Do we share that learning with other work units and stuff? So that,
yep, all across each division, each group across the organization has monthly safety meetings, and we'll share those, both the incident itself and then the learnings and or RCA results with everybody.
Thank you. Any other questions about the dashboard? Next is 8, our governance planning calendar. 8A, adoption of the 2026 governance planning calendar. I'll call for a motion.
I am for approval.
What up here? Are there any changes to the governance planning calendar? That there was something. Oh, I know. We're going to get a briefing on the Energy Northwest SMR at some point.
Correct. And Jofina and I were in contact with that. That we're going to wait to add it to the calendar until they have a more confirmed date when that will be.
Right. I was just thinking it should be added to be scheduled.
Sure, I can talk to him again about it. He had requested not to put it on there at all yet.
Okay.
I can double check.
Okay. Anything else on that? Okay, I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passed unanimously. Is there any further business to come before the board? It is now 10:48. Hearing none, it's 10:48, and our meeting is adjourned. Happy Halloween, everyone. Stay safe.